Welcome
to the Power Your Life radio show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, and certified coach, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and well-being in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Welcome, everybody. This is Joanne White, and I am really very excited about this show today because it's really very close to my heart. And I'm also very excited and blessed that we have two incredible guests that are going to be sharing their wisdom and their hearts and their know-how with you in just a little while. And April is coming up as the National Autism Awareness Month, which I think is very important because this is the second year that it will be recognized, and we know how important it is. Before that time, the prevalence for autism was 1 in 150 children, and the United States Center for Disease Control and Prevention revised that prevalence for autism to the rate of 110 children. So it's really very important and very essential. And there are so much confusion and misconceptions about autism and also incorrect assumptions. People think that with this condition that oftentimes it's caused by some kind of emotional deprivation or the way that children have been brought up, which is so not true. And part of that reason is because of some of the behaviors that these children exhibited. Asperger's syndrome is not something that's very easy to diagnose. And what happens is Asperger's syndrome is a neurological disorder or condition that's part of a group of conditions called the autism spectrum disorders. And what that means is just that it refers to a large range of developmental disabilities that include autism as well as other disorders with similar characteristics. And the reason that it's on a spectrum is because the symptoms are so different and in different combinations and also in varying degrees of severity. And so it's estimated, and this is really shocking, it's estimated that more than 400,000 families are affected by Asperger's syndrome. I'm going to say that again. We're just talking about the United States. 400,000 families are affected by autism. And because milder cases are being identified more frequently, the incidents, the numbers are growing and are increasing. And it's so important, as I said, that we need to have people like Susan Elmer and like Dr. Forward who are going to be here to really talk to you and to educate all of us, including myself. This has been something that's been so important to me for years because many years ago when I was in Pennsylvania and in Philadelphia, I started a program for, it was children who, and this dates me a little bit, but that's okay, it was for children who were never before allowed into public school. And it became children who were by the public school system identified as children that were too severe to be educated. And oftentimes parents had to educate these children at home because there was really no alternative. And many of the children that were in my class at the time were children who were diagnosed with autism or autistic tendencies. And it was just incredible to work with these children and to work with their parents who really, I believe, were instrumental in helping change the laws, in helping educate the public, in helping getting us the services that these children so sorely need today. So I'm going to introduce Susan Elmer, who is an incredible, tireless mother and professional who has a fierce, noble spirit and bountiful energy. She's the president of FACES, and she'll talk to you about that, which is an autism support group. And she's also the mother of a 14-year-old son with Asperger's syndrome. Susan was voted the Atlanta County Woman of the Year just recently, and she advocates for families and children with autism. She is also a speech and language pathologist, and she's been working in the field of advocacy for autism for over 25 years. She produced a movie called Tim E to help others understand her son Timmy. She also uses Circle of Friends, which we'll find out about in a few minutes, to work professionally in many school districts, training peers to understand the person with autism. And Susan believes, and so do I, that peers are much more effective than adults in helping these children facilitate social skills. She works full-time at Cape May County Special Services School District and really helps these districts and professionals develop strategies to support students in inclusive education. So without further ado, here's Susan Elmer. Susan, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, Joanne, I just want to say thank you for shining your light on autism. It is near and dear to my heart, as you just shared, not only having a son, but of working so many years with these individuals and their families. And I think the biggest thing you said is how misunderstood it is, and also that feeling like a bad parent.
Right, and you know, parents got a bad rap, and probably they still do for this for so many years, because what professionals did and medical doctors did at the time, they said that it was about poor child rearing or something that you did wrong in during pregnancy stages. And even though we don't have all the information yet regarding what the causes are, some are environmental, some they think have to do with some of the preservatives and the vaccinations that children take or have to go through in the early years, there's still a lot about autism that's unknown. But I wanted to focus on, because you are a professional, and I know that parents have had to, as I said earlier, have had to be the voice, have had to be the advocates for their children to get services and to get programs and to get schools and to get professionals to really relook and rethink and figure out how to effectively educate these children. So what's it like to be a parent advocate?
Well, I can remember one of the child study team meetings where we get together at the school to discuss your child and their services, and I remember them saying, well, in a few years, there'll be a better program because there'll be more kids coming in with autism. My son's only 14 years old, but he still was considered at that time as a newer individual diagnosed with Asperger's, which is a rather newer diagnosis in the 50s. But I remember also early on knowing that it was me who had to get to know him best. I had to understand how he operated, not only neurologically, but sensory-wise. He had so many movement differences. He licked cars. He would want to spin and spin and spin and spin and spin. And then what I did is I developed a program in my house. We have a climbing wall in the living room. We hung a swing in the living room. He would lay in that and do puzzles, because otherwise we weren't able to get his attention. And when I would go into the schools, they were more concerned initially about his behavior. They said, one woman teacher said, as strong as he is, I'm going to get just as strong back. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, she's going to be biting my son, because that's what's going to end up happening to her. But that's why I made the movie, because it's only people's perspectives that are brought to you. So when I was out in public and parents would come up and say, you know, your child's not allowed to do that, I wasn't mad at them because they didn't have the perspective. Their child would operate in a typical fashion. If you said, you know, they did the wrong thing, you go out in the timeout room. And so I thought my job was to help change their perspective. So we went to San Diego to make a movie.
Right. And is that movie available for people to look at? Is that online or anything?
No, I don't. I just have copies myself. And if you go to the FACESAutismSupport.org website, that's how you can reach me. And we have had it, we show it at different workshops. There's a workshop coming up on March 12th, and the focus of that is going to be Circle of Friends, which is very exciting because, as you said, peers are able to get through to these guys better than any adult. And it's almost miraculous to watch.
Right. I think it's incredible. And I want to talk a little bit more about Circle of Friends, but I want to read a quote that you sent me that you said is one of your favorite quotes. And it goes like this, and this is from Susan Elmer. Each day is an opportunity to love those whom others fear. Everyone needs to feel acceptance. And this is so true because I remember years ago, children whose behavior, and not only years ago, I mean, it's happening today and we know it's just not as prevalent, but children, one of the young girls in my class who was diagnosed with autistic tendencies was actually waiting at a site for the school bus to pick her up. And even though, and her parent, she was presumably in good hands, so her parent had gone home because she had to get to work. And this girl, because of her behavior, some of what you were talking about, the twirling and the flailing of the arms and the repetition in terms of language, she was beaten up at the bus stop. And she was defenseless and really was very upset and did not understand why. So I think what you're talking about, the circle of friends, is so very important. Would you share what that is for our listeners, please?
Yeah, I actually can't wait to. It's just exciting because in talking about that girl, one of the main reasons for circle of friends is to draw those peers around them so they more or less have their back. Early on, when my son was in kindergarten, there were these two little twins whose, I found out, mother was a special ed teacher. And they came to the house once and they said, Mrs. Elmer, our teacher doesn't know Timmy the same way we do. We understand Timmy. And that's the beginning of Circle of Friends. Other time when I went into the classroom, kids would be coming up to me saying, do you know Timmy doesn't do this, or he acts weird, or he doesn't follow the directions. And once I'd give them a little bit of information about how his brain works, they were not only relieved, but they were willing to be helpers themselves. And a few years ago, Governor Corzine gave grants for autism, and my boss here at Cape May County Special Services was a recipient, and she designed the job for me. And one of the things that we designed in that was to go into other districts and to teach the typical students about their peers with autism so they could become friends and also supporters and advocates. And one of the things that we talk about is that circle. In the middle circle is the individual, but right outside that circle is your best friends. And I ask, well, how many people are in your circle? And they, you know, we'd fill in all the little dots, and then I would bring up a student that's having, you know, either on the autism spectrum or having social issues, and they would maybe say one, and then I ask them to raise their hand and ask if they're willing to be in that circle for that student, and just about every kid raises their hand each time.
Oh, that's incredible.
They want to help, and they're not as fearful as maybe adults would be. My son has been the recipient of so many peers because I have found out in his classes, who are those kids? They're probably our future special ed teachers. But who are they? And then I have them come to the house. This Friday we're having a Valentine's party, and it's a combination of kids from my older son, who's 16, his circle of friends, and they're very supportive to Timmy. And then there's students coming that are in Timmy's special ed class, and I'm hearing from their parents that they've never been invited to a party before.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's
goodness.
Just... Those are simple things that we can do. We can host a party. We can find out who those special kids are and become a part of their life and help them to feel accepted. It's just so fun to be a part of.
And it's so very important because, like you said, a simple thing that normal kids take for granted, invited to a party, a birthday party, invited over for friends, for play dates with friends or whatever. A lot of these children don't have that opportunity, and some of it is because of that lack of understanding and the initial fear. And so Circle of Friends is wonderful because it's allowing children to understand the differences. And with Asperger's syndrome, the brain is wired differently. It affects communication.
And it's helping them to understand that.
Right.
And it's important to know, though, you just can't invite these children over, or you just can't ask them to be a friend and then leave. You have to give them training. You have to give them skills. And sometimes people think, well, they're just kids. Is it appropriate to be giving them formal training? Yes, it is. And the earlier they get it, the more secure. Not only does it apply to the kids that have autism spectrum disorders, but any difference. And then what I'm noticing is that some of the students that want to be friends have issues themselves. My son, who is now 14, has become a peer mentor to another individual who is more has more restrictive. She's nonverbal. She's still not able to get her body to do the things that she wants them to do. So my son, just the other night, we got together for our FACES Autism Support Group, which is a great opportunity to get the siblings together with these guys. But he says, Mom, when I first see her, it's an empty high. It's like nothing's there. And then I spend a few minutes with her. I start to feel what she's feeling. And then my brain starts thinking ahead of what she's thinking. And every time I ask her a question, I always wait for her to answer. Because even though she's not saying it aloud, I know she's answering in her head. But if you could see the joy on this girl's face when she's with him, knowing that she's accepted.
And knowing that there's somebody, also knowing that there's somebody that understands acceptance, taking the time, but understands that even though she's not talking verbally, she is communicating and Timmy is getting that communication. You know, so I think that's incredible. You know, oftentimes what is brought out so often are the challenges that parents face in terms of having children with Asperger's and children with autism. And I know that those challenges are numerous because of all the struggles that parents have had to go through. But talk a little bit about the rewards, because that's not something that is usually typical in terms of how it's promoted.
Well, one of the rewards is, and something I learned early on with my Timmy, is to learn flexibility, that life isn't just pre-planned. And I've learned to accept those good moments and hold them in my heart. I've also learned that other people come into his life that I wouldn't have met before, different specialists. We have one man that came into the home, and he said, you have to keep taking him out. I didn't want to take Timmy out in public because of the looks that people gave me, because of the even the people would come right up and share things. And this man, with his love and understanding, and just I was able to work through him, and kind of a mantra in my head, just keep taking him out, and things do get better. People would tell me that, and I couldn't believe it, because you don't want to believe it, because if it doesn't get better, I want to be okay with the way it is now. But things do get better, and especially because there's I kept bringing him out. I didn't keep him sheltered, so he had more opportunity to experience things, and in that experience, the next time we would go, it would be a little bit better. And especially with Asperger's and autism, some of their routines and their rituals can be so humorous. And the language, their take on life. And Timothy is so outspoken, and he is honest. He'll say, how did Daddy catch you? Because you're not really a good catch. I don't see you as really pretty, Mom. And to me, I love it. I think, who in this world is that honest? And I said, well, you didn't know me, Timmy, when Daddy met me. I was really hot lady. But to see his take and the way he said about this young woman, he said, Mom, you know, I'm going to marry her. I said, oh, you are? He said, well, when someone loves you, you marry them. That's Asperger's. Mm-hmm. I said, well, she's still potty. You know, she still doesn't have toilet training. She doesn't talk. And I said, well, Tim, I might have to move in with you then. And he said, if a man can't take care of his wife, they shouldn't marry. And I just thought, those moments are so beautiful to me because he's not seeing life with all its constrictions and complications. It's more simple. But yet he's stressed out a lot.
Right, and you and I had talked about how the most difficult time is the time in school because of the behavior and because of the education. Now Timmy has an IQ that's totally above average, but he's still having difficulties in school. You know that what I found, I was doing some research. I'm just going to share this with you. We have about five more minutes. I found some incredible sites for help for parents, help for professionals to get to know what's going on with children with autism and Asperger's. And there was one site that's called The Blessing. It's My Asperger's Child, and they list the 40 positive characteristics of Asperger's. You were mentioning one of them, that they're truthful to a fault, blurting out the first thing that... So that honesty is so beautiful. They're physically beautiful. They're fascinated by facts and dates. They're excited about the world around them with a zest and a hunger for learning. And there's so much more, but we don't have time for that. What's really important, though, is we have like a couple of minutes, and I wish we had so much more time. You and I talked about possibly getting Timmy on the show, and I'd love it. And so we'll talk to Timmy and get him on the show at some point soon. But... what parting advice do you have for parents and professionals in terms of children with Asperger's and autism? What would you tell them?
I guess the main thing is to not give up. That piece of advice that I shared before is to keep bringing them to things and exposing them to new opportunities and to find a group where there's other people that share that same understanding, because me being a part of the autism support group, the FACES group, just when we relate the experiences and we also find time to get together with each other. We make it a point once a month, a group of us, to just be without our children and to not even talk about autism because you need a break. It can be all-encompassing.
Susan, I'm going to interrupt you for 1 minute because I just want to say hello to Dr. Forward, who's on the line. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so we'll be with you in a few minutes. Thank you so much. So, Susan, you do so much with parents and with children. Is there anything else that you want to tell us that you think is important? A little bit about the organization that you work with?
Well, yeah, just that you can reach the FACESAutismSupport.org, and I would love to speak with anybody more if they want it. It's FACES-AutismSupport.org. We're having a conference in New Jersey on March 12th with a fantastic speaker, David Petoniak. And I just thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Oh,
really,
you've been a pleasure, and thank you for your time and your knowledge, and thank you for all that you do in advocating for children and teens with autism. And I know that being a parent of a teenager, being a teenager and being a parent of a teenager in and of itself is a challenge, but it's even more so with a son and a daughter who have Asperger's. So at some time we'll talk about that even more.
All right, we will be in touch. Okay,
thank you. Thanks again. Have a great day. And in just a few moments, I'm going to bring on Dr. Forward, who's patiently waiting for us. He actually chose to enter the healthcare field after recovering from a debilitating migraine headache caused by an automobile collision as a teenager. When no doctors were able to help his migraines, including top neurologists, he decided to begin chiropractic treatment. And then he went on professionally because his headaches disappeared and studied at the University of Delaware and received his doctorate degree from Western States Chiropractic College. And then he began to work in neurology, and he developed one of the largest single clinical centers in Delaware during the 1980s. But his work in neurology began with his study, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Dr. Forward, so help me if I'm not, under Dr. Frederick Carrick in the Functional Neurology Program, and received his board certification in neurology in 1992, and continues to this day to work with patients with neurological challenges. He also, while he was studying at the Institute, learned of Dr. Robert Melillo's groundbreaking brain balance program, of which Dr. Forward actually has opened one here in Pennsylvania. And this program in Wayne, Pennsylvania, helps children with neurobehavioral deficits to improve their academic, social, and behavioral functions that use a drug-free approach. So welcome, Dr. Forward. How are you?
Well, very good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for being here. Can you tell us a little bit about what a functional disconnection is?
Well,
what does that mean?
Well, it's really where the latest research is going. And in reality, these ideas are maybe as long as 30 years old. It's been in the literature. And this is what Dr. Melillo keyed on over 15 years ago as the key to these problems. And what it is that when we look at brains of autism in imaging studies and different ways to look at it, they appear to be normal. And so the areas of the brain are normal, but they're missing their connections, okay? So the functional connections are those things that turn on those centers and allow them to intercommunicate and actually work as a normal brain. When those connections don't occur, and these occur through problems with development, then the children can't use those areas of the brain. And then they have different kinds of problems, like autism or attention deficit or all these other kinds of problems that are affecting kids today.
So how does the brain balance program that you have, how does that help these children? The whole idea of brain balancing is so fascinating, but tell us more.
Well, what our approach is basically that the problems with these kids are that the connections aren't there through the lack of the proper development. So the brain centers are there, but they're not connected. So what we do, we find these brain centers and how they're functioning through a very comprehensive kind of evaluation. So we look at many different things. And anywhere that we see the child delayed in their normal development, then that's a key spot. That's an area that the brain isn't functioning at its optimal. So we will then match a stimulus to that area of the brain and work with the child, and that helps that area become more developed and then more functional.
What kind of stimulus are you referring to?
Well, let's make it easy. And we've probably all done this at some time in high school gym class, where we were tested to see how many push-ups or sit-ups we could do, and then we were graded to a national standard, and we could say, well, you're ahead of the national standard, or you're behind the national standard. Well, really, if we can't do the number of sit-ups that we should be able to do at that age-appropriate time, then we are not fully developed in that way. So and of course, the right stimulus to make us to improve our abilities in sit-ups or push-ups are going to be sit-ups or push-ups. So we're going to do more of those, and as we do more of those, we're going to gain the abilities to actually function at our age-appropriate level. And of course,
so it's about repeating those skills over and over again with repetition and doing it so that we get comfortable with it and our bodies and our brains get more knowledgeable about it. Is that it?
Yeah, it's almost common sense. But these are principles of what we call neuroplasticity, which means the ability of nerves to change and learn, and so that the right stimulus repeated in a progressively challenging way is what makes a nerve actually turn on and be able to work.
So we need the stimulus. So
absolutely.
With these children, what kind of stimuli are you using then? or does it is it very specific and very individualized?
Well, yes, and so we're looking at the nervous system, and the nervous system is a sensory motor system. That's the input and the output of how the nerves work and develop. In fact, all development occurs through interplay between our senses and our environment, which means our muscles and our body, using our body and our eyes, our ears, all those things are what make development. When it goes askew, then we can figure out what it is that's not right and then enhance that stimulus. So it could be a light stimulus or a sound stimulus. It could be touch. It could be different posturing. And we also have cognitive components that are academic in nature. It all depends on our evaluation and how we understand that particular problem in that child. And all children are different. Even two autistics aren't going to have the same profile, exact same profile of developmental delays. So every child.
So that's why that assessment is so important that you're talking about.
That's right. Exactly. And we have to know, because the program has to match very precisely that individual.
What kind of successes are you seeing using this program?
Well, we're seeing some pretty phenomenal changes because there have been autistics that have entered our program who no longer have the problems of autism. They're functioning as normal kids. We've had, right now there is an outcome study being done with the Brain Balance students to see how this is going to come out in a scientific look. And prior to this, we looked at ADHD kids, and with the ADHD kids in our 12-week program, the kids did phenomenally well, and 82% of those children no longer had the diagnostic criteria for ADHD after our 12-week program. So we can help kids tremendously move their development forward by 1, 2 to 4 years in our 12-week program.
That's incredible. So once you move their development forward and they're in the program, you're talking about something like 12 weeks, is there any backsliding or do you not know that yet? Let's say you work with a child a year or 2 years ago. So do they start developing normally and all those developmental delays are no longer there, or can something happen, whether it's emotional or social, that impedes their progress again?
Well, we encourage our parents to bring the kids back on an annual basis so we can take a look and see how they're doing. And from our research, the children are not regressing. However, there are things that can cause regression to occur. We've had a child who became seriously ill with a bacterial infection and had a typhoid infection when he traveled abroad, and he regressed afterward. But these kinds of things we're looking at these types of things and different kinds of environmental factors that happen to us now that are the root cause of these things. We see it as what we call epigenetic problems with the genes. So it's not the genes themselves, but it's something in the environment that's causing the genes to express abnormally.
Do we know
our
what that
program,
is? Do we know what's going on in the environment?
It's a whole host of things. For instance, one of the things that we're seeing is chemicals in the environment. There was a paper in the Journal of Pediatrics just a few months ago that showed a direct link to pesticides that we use on our fruits, vegetables, and lawns, that as the blood levels increase in the children, the problems with learning increase directly. So there's a direct relationship to chemicals in our environment. Other things like sedentary behavior, because development is key, again, on movement and thinking and seeing and hearing and all these things. When we become sedentary, it slows down that developmental process. And not only in the individual, the baby, but also while the baby's growing in the mother. The mother has, in these days, used to be mothers who were pregnant were put on a pedestal. They were treated differently and given every break to grow that child in a normal, healthy way. And we've kind of lost that. Most of the workforce includes pregnant women who work right up to a week before pregnancy, and they're back to work 3 weeks later. And so as a result, they're in front of a computer. They're not moving. They're waking up to an alarm clock, not to their natural rhythms of sleep. So these kind of environmental stresses can create problems that are what we call epigenetic and cause those genes to express abnormally.
It's interesting because I actually am working with counseling a few women who are pregnant right now, and they have wonderful, there's now exercise yoga for pregnant mothers and Pilates, and you've been talking about movement. So do you recommend that kind of stuff? Because again, it's getting them moving, it's getting them active rather than just being sedentary and not moving, as you say. Do you encourage that?
Absolutely. The more active they can be and more that they can tune into their rhythms of sleep properly. Of course, sleep is so important, particularly when you're growing a baby, and eating properly, the proper nutrition, proper foods, trying to avoid exposure to chemicals and things in our environment. Those things are so important.
You know, you talk a lot about how there are differences between helping children in elementary school and helping children who are older and adolescent in terms of social skills and educational skills. How should children, younger children with this condition, be treated at school? And then let's move on to older kids.
Well, it depends a lot on their particular delays, but with the autistic kids, for sure, it's important to keep the child on the move, not have them sit around all day, but to have periods where they're able to move and encourage that movement. Exercise is very important for these kids. And also, for instance, what we see is in the autistic children, there's a hemispheric weakness in the brain. That right hemisphere is underdeveloped. So they should sit actually on the right side of the room so that the stimulus coming in from sound and sight and looking come in from the left, which then stimulates that right hemisphere. It's actually a stimulus to strengthen the weaknesses in their nervous system by simply sitting on that right side of the room for autistic kids.
You know, that sounds so simple that educators could be doing that so easily, but I don't even know that teachers and professionals are aware of what you said. That's totally new to me, and yet that could be done without any kind of disruption to a classroom and really benefit these kids. Are professionals getting this information? I mean, going around and advocating for that, or what?
We are, and I have a teacher education lecture that I've been presenting to teachers, and it's helpful for them to understand how to recognize the children with learning disorders and then and practical things they can do in the classroom. You know, autistics don't like change, so helping them with change or preparing them for change, letting them know that change is going to occur, and also recognizing the difference between relevant behavioral issues and the child's rigidity of thought or their processing difficulties. So sometimes we expect more out of the kids than they can actually deliver, and we have to approach them in ways that are creative and unique because they don't process things normally.
Now, if you were talking to a parent and a parent came to you whose son or daughter was just recently diagnosed with autism, what would you tell that parent? What would be some of the first steps that you would recommend for that parent to do? Because oftentimes parents come, they hear that, there's an initial shock, even a kind of numbness and fear about it, and just a lot of turmoil. So what do you tell them?
Well, first off, the autistic problems that kids have today aren't well defined by the diagnosis of autism. So we really need to understand exactly what's wrong with that individual child. So a pediatric neurologist may be able to help. Our evaluation at the Brain Balance Centers is probably the most comprehensive evaluation that's out there today for these children, aimed at finding all the developmental delays that we can find, because traditionally these kids were approached with maybe one modality. They'd go into vision therapy or hearing auditory therapy or different kinds of behavioral therapy, different kinds of things, but they do them one at a time. Brain Balance chooses to do things a little differently because we believe that by hitting all the problems at once, we can move their developmental delays up to a point where they stabilize at a new level. Whereas if we approach one at a time, often one will improve, but because you haven't improved the baseline, that improvement may regress back down again. If we can bring the whole level forward, then there's no regression because there's no place for it to regress to.
Right. I just want to interrupt for a minute. Our call-in number, we're talking to Dr. Forward of the Brain Balancing Center, talking about autism, and our call-in number is 805-285-9790, and we look forward to people calling in and asking Dr. Forward any questions about autism. What about social skills, Dr. Forward? We know that obviously they're different for younger children versus teenagers or whatever. What do we need to look for, and what is important in terms of teaching those skills to children and teens?
Right. Well, you know, there are certain developmental milestones that occur in children that are normal. So normal behavior, you know, for instance, for language, for instance, you know, a child at 12 months is going to be able to start saying their first word. Before that, they've been babbling in a greater and more organized babble and sing-songy kind of babbling. And then they get to the point at 1 year old where they actually start to say words. Okay, so that's normal development. And now, if the child isn't talking at age one, after 12 months, and they're delayed, something is amiss. And so we can start to work with language in different ways with younger children, and that's very important. But development is not a logical process. It's very illogical. So movement may be very important for actually the ability to hear sounds or to see things in the proper way. So different types of developmental processes occur. So you can't sit a child down and simply teach them the alphabet and expect them to be able to speak or hear. It's processing problems that are often preventing the children from taking on the language. So it's not like you can teach them the language. They have to be developed. Their nervous system has to develop to the level where they can understand and hear and speak and those kinds of things.
Now, you've been working with a lot of autistic children and families. Can you share a success story with us about working with one family, something kind of more of a human interest story? Because I know that we have a lot of parents who are kind of listening and really, really would love to hear that kind of information from a professional such as yourself.
We have lots of kids that we're working with, but one 6-year-old comes to mind. He was in kindergarten, and his typical autistic types of behaviors where he didn't have good eye contact, wouldn't look you in the eye, and he was emotionally unstable. He would cry and melt down, as we call it, you know, fall down on the floor and just cry. And this would be occurring in kindergarten every day and multiple times every day. So he was very unstable, wanted to stay within himself, didn't really communicate with the other kids much or play with the other kids. And his mom was doing many things, had him in karate class and doing different things to try and encourage him. But even when he got to karate class, often he'd just stick by his mom's side and wouldn't want to really participate. So he entered the brain balance program. And so soon we started to notice some changes by and these that he started to become more stable emotionally, started to communicate in different ways at a higher level. And then so he got through his first day with no meltdown, no crying, no, you know, he got through the first day. And then
no tantrum.
Yeah. And then he managed to get through a whole week, a whole week solid, right on through, no meltdown. And so all of a sudden the child is gaining neurological control over his emotions, where his emotions would just spill out. There's no control over those things. And then all of a sudden, as the parts of the nervous system that allow the brain to control those emotional mechanisms gains control, all of a sudden the child now has control, and they can sit there in class and participate as a more normal kid without ending up on the floor in a crying fit. So and then things change socially. By the end of the program, when he got to karate class, he bolted from mom, headed for the kids, and started into conversation with the kids. So he gained a tremendous amount of developmental gain in our 12-week program, where he could do many things that he just couldn't do before, and he was stymied by all these problems in his nervous system that didn't allow him to function as a normal kid. So
that's incredible.
How old is he now?
He's
either still 6 or 7, and
and
you know, all of his problems didn't go away. So he's going to be coming back this summer for another 12-week session, which we expect some additional big improvements in his abilities to function.
You know, that's so wonderful, and it's wonderful to have success stories. For those of us parents and professionals who have been in the field and working with children and teenagers with special needs, one of the things that I really learned early on when I was teaching children with special needs was that to really pay attention to those little areas of progress. So that sometimes just beginning to, let's say if you want to do shoe tying and to begin to initially be able to hold up those two strings to the shoelaces and then maybe possibly moving them together, all of that is representative of progress. And it's amazing to be able to applaud those little areas of growth rather than just thinking, well, he's not doing it because right now he can't tie his shoe. But, yeah, look what he did. What you were describing with this 6-year-old is just suddenly gaining more and more ability socially and language-wise and cognitively to allow him to get to a point to function more normally and to participate more normally. And I think that advice, for not only for people and parents of children with special needs, but for all parents and all teachers, is that we need to, in some way, really embrace those little achievements, those little growths, because they do lead to bigger achievement and to bigger skills, and we need to just recognize that and see them as progress.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We kind of try to make a little game out of it sometimes by asking the parents to look for the first evers, So these little mini gains or mini reward or achievements we can celebrate when they have their first ever. You know, all of a sudden they're doing something that just is atypical for them, and all of a sudden they're doing something that is a much more normal behavior, and we recognize it, applaud it, and those are the things that encourage us to keep us going, because sometimes it can be a little bit of a rocky road as the children's nervous systems change and change rapidly. Sometimes those we can go into periods where the brain is reorganizing and things seemingly are worse temporarily. So it's a process that is very rewarding as we see them change, but it's not an easy process sometimes.
Right. Right. I love that first ever. I think that's great, really, because it's important to acknowledge those areas of achievement, as we both talked about. Now, we only have a couple more minutes, so what would you, as a professional, say to parents and to teachers or other professionals working with children with autism? What kind of advice would you give them, or information would you give them right off?
Well, you know, I would say first, you know, keep your eye on the latest research that's going on, that's where I think things are headed in this disconnection syndromes that we have, that I think Brain Balance is accurately looking in the right way for these kids, because our success has been so extraordinary with these kids. And to possibly look for Brain Balance centers as some source for information and for to do evaluations for the children, to see, instead of seeing these problems as behavioral problems or academic problems, that they are actually developmental delay problems, and let's find out what's really wrong with the children so that we can approach those delays and help these children move forward.
I think that's so important. How can people get a hold of you, and how can people get in touch with now the program that you have here in Wayne, Pennsylvania, that's the one that you're overseeing and operating. Do you have any others that I know you travel around the country too, but give us some more information about that before we close.
Well, there's about 40 centers around the country open or in the process of opening, and our national website is at brainbalancecenters.com, brainbalancecenters.com, and on that website there's a locator, a center locator, where you can find out the center nearest you or in your area, and it also has a wealth of information in there in terms of a lot of the Brain Balance ideas, the research behind what we've come up with, and those kinds of things. So that's a valuable website.
Great. How can parents get a hold of you?
Well, personally, our phone number there is 610-688-2700. And that is a direct line right into our center. And our email address is Wayne, as in Wayne, Pennsylvania, Wayne@brainbalancecenters.com. And you could email us or give us a call, and we'd be glad to talk to you about whatever issues you're having with your kids.
Thank you so much, Dr. Forward. It's been wonderfully informative, and it's been great to have you on the show. Thanks for giving up your time and your knowledge and your expertise to share with our listeners, and I wish you a great day.
Well, thank you, and same to you. Thanks for the opportunity to share.
Thanks again.
Right.
We've been talking to Susan Elmer and Dr. Forward, and what I was saying earlier that excited me as I was doing some research is that there are so many wonderful sites about Asperger's and autism, sites for parents, sites for resources such as books and programs. There's even one program where some parents are utilizing a coach to help them sort of coach them to work with their kids and to really get some feedback as to how to do it. And what I was talking to Susan Elmer early on were the positives associated with Asperger's, and I wanted to share some of them with you, because oftentimes what we know are what are considered the negatives. They have strange behavior, they don't give eye contact, they have meltdowns, as Dr. Forward said, but also there are the positives, and these are so important to really note. And I mentioned a few earlier, I'm just going to share a few more. These children, the positives with people with Asperger's, they're fascinated by facts and dates. They're loyal with impeccable dependability. They're often very perceptive, as Susan Elmer was talking about her son Tim and that little girl and how he was able to really understand her language when she wasn't talking, but just really being able to understand that and really being able to identify with her and bring her some joy, because here was somebody that understood her and that also accepted her, as Susan Elmer said. They are the unsung heroes with trusting optimism. As we said earlier, they are truthful to a fault. They avoid ritualistic small talk or socially trivial statements and superficial conversations. They can hear things that normal people cannot hear. They can memorize lines from movies. They could spend days in their bedrooms, in their rooms, reading children's encyclopedias. They have a great consideration of details. They have a rare freshness and a sense of wonderment. They have a rote memory and an overall good memory. They have a sweet innocence about them. They have enthusiasm for unique interests and topics. They take everything literally and are usually unprejudiced. They remember lots of things about their life, both past and present, and they often have the ability to regard others at face value, so they're not really passing all that judgment that we do. They have the amazing ability to absorb facts easily in their brains. Well, I can go on and on and on about these, but I just think it's important because oftentimes, and particularly when I was teaching children with autism, everybody just emphasized the downside. Oh, it's so difficult. And we know that. We know it's hard to be a parent, and it's even hard to be an adult and a child with any kind of special needs. But what they weren't talking about were these pluses and these positives. And I think that's so important for all of us, because even those of us who don't have special needs, oftentimes what we do with ourselves is we look at what's wrong with us or what we don't do well, rather than really emphasizing the positive. So I think that's a lesson for each and every one of us today, to really take a look at ourselves, take a look at our families, take a look at those people around us, our friends, our associates, our coworkers, and really take a look at the pluses, the positives that are associated with them, because I think we're really blessed in this country, and we're really blessed to be fortunate to have friends and family and people that care. So I want to tell you about some exciting upcoming guests next week, February 16th, at the same time, noon, in Eastern Standard. We're going to have the amazing Kreskin, who has had television appearances such as David Letterman, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. He's always on CNN and The View. He has been on Fox News each year predicting for each year, and hopefully he'll give us some predictions. And he has worked with royalty and presidential families and has earned the status as the world's foremost mentalist. So we're very lucky to have him on the show next week, and I really can't wait to hear what he has to say. Also, coming up Wednesday, February 23rd, I have two guests. Cheetan Parkin, who's the author of the Human Design book, Discover the Person You Were Born to Be. And this is a system that's the newest self-awareness tool available that is a successor to astrology. It fuses Kabbalah, astrology, the I Ching, the chakra system with physics and genetic coding to really form an entity in and of itself. So really excited about that. And then I have Stephen Shapiro, who's a foremost authority, same day, 12:30, 23rd, foremost authority on innovation and collaboration, and he's worked with Fortune 500 companies such as Johnson & Johnson, Pearson Education, Nestle, Bristol-Myers, Staples, GE, BP, and I can go on and on and on and on. And he has a lot of books, and he's going to talk about his newest, it's a game that he sent me, and I love it. I've been trying to play with it, called Personality Poker, and it's a card-based tool used in more than 25,000 people around the world to create high-performance and high-performing innovation teams. So we have a great lineup for February, and I wish you the best of the day here on the East Coast, we're seeing the sun melting and we're seeing signs of spring. The birds are all around. And not only are we seeing signs of spring outside, but I want to wish you to remind yourself that there are also internal signs of spring. People, there's more light, but I want you to feel more of that light in and of yourself and to really take an opportunity each and every day to applaud you, to applaud your contributions, your efforts, whether they're large and small, and to take a moment to really feel grateful about who and where you are. Thank you so much for sharing your day with us. And this is Joanne White signing off. I'll be with you next week. Take care. Have a great and blessed day.
You've been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with your host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the Upbeat Show to grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again by visiting SivaToolbox.com and BlogTalkRadio.com. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.